Film Spotting is brought to you by Spout.com/contests. Test your movie knowledge and win a Nintendo Wii when you join the scavenger hunt at Spout.com/contests, going on right now.
What kind of a show are you guys putting on here today?
You're not interested in art?
No.
Now look, we're going to do this thing. We're going to have a conversation.
From Chicago, this is Film Spotting. I'm Maddie Robinson.
And I'm Adam Kempinar. This week, Steven Spielberg and Harrison Ford inspire Maddie and I to dust off some of our favorite movie heroes. We'll count down our top five characters who need a comeback.
Plus, listener feedback, Massacre Theater, music by David Ford, and the fourth film in our 70s sci-fi marathon.
This is tasty.
Adam, what are you eating?
Man, this new Soylent Green is delicious. I wonder what's in it.
But first, Adam and I grab our whips. And fedoras. To battle Cate Blanchett and the commies. I've got a bad feeling about this.
Legend says that a crystal skull was stolen from a mythical lost city in the Amazon. Supposedly built out of solid gold. Guarded by the living dead. Whoever returns the skull to the city temple will be given control over its power.
You will help us find it.
A simple yes will do.
Maddie, when news broke last April that Harrison Ford, now in his mid-60s, was going to once again don his trademark Indiana Jones fedora almost 20 years after The Last Crusade, Film Spotting posed this poll question to its listeners. How do you feel about Indiana Jones 4 with Harrison Ford, Cate Blanchett, Ray Winstone, and Shia LaBeouf starting production in June? The options were, the cast looks great and it's Lucas Spielberg. The cast looks great, but it's Lucas Spielberg. The story is what will worry me, not the cast or director, or Indy can't escape this disaster. A third of voters couldn't wait. The cast looks great and it's Lucas Spielberg. But the other two-thirds either thought it was going to be an absolute disaster or express reservations about the skills of the film's producer and director, or about the story that would have to be concocted around a geriatric hero. A couple weeks ago here on the show, you said that you were excited about Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, and to give listeners some idea just how excited you were, as the lights went down on our screening, you were as giggly as a 16-year-old schoolgirl getting asked to the senior prom. You just didn't want the movie to bombard you with joke after joke about how old Indy is, essentially turning him into Danny Glover's Sergeant Murtaugh from Lethal Weapon. Don't wink at me, you pleaded. Give me Indy. Give me Indy fighting the communists or whatever it is. Well, Kingdom of the Crystal Skull gives you communists. The film is set in 1957, after all, at the height of the Red Scare. But did you get the Indy you were begging for? Was Spielberg and Ford and Lucas somehow able to recapture the Saturday afternoon serial magic after all these years?
Well, I wasn't around to enjoy the serial phenomenon. That's more from your age, right? You taking a
nice.
Taking a dime down
sure.
the Nickelodeon.
Yep.
They try and sell you war bonds between the features.
Well done. Well played.
But I am guessing that this definitely captures what I imagine in my mind's eye to be that sort of serial feel. I mean, you have this hero. He finds himself in quicksand. He's got to get out of that. He's avoiding Russian gunfire. He's fending off lost Amazonian tribes. I mean, it's a lot of fun, and it works as a solid sort of drive-in adventure film. It reminded me actually a lot of King Solomon's Mines, the old Alan Quatermain adventure. But as an Indiana Jones film...
I knew the butt was coming.
Yeah. I don't think it manages to replicate the magic specific to that trilogy. I mean, I honestly believe Indiana Jones and the Raiders of the Lost Ark to be one of the finest films ever made, and I will boldly defend it as such. I think the other films in the series, they really have their moments. But for me, watching this film, it felt like a football fan watching Franco Harris in a Seattle Seahawks uniform at the end of his career. It's just not right. It can still bring you moments of joy, but it just doesn't pack the same punch. It gives you the aforementioned quicksand and the Russians and the waterfalls, and they're all fun, but it doesn't give you running from a huge boulder or running behind a gong to save yourself from gunfire or a monkey brain dinner, all those iconic, memorable scenes that we associate with Indy. This film, about halfway through, it's just all over the place, and I think it's betrayed mainly by its plot. And yes, I'm sorry, it's way too reliant on in-jokes.
Well, I hear what you're saying, but wait for it. You're completely wrong.
No
way.
Actually,
you're not completely wrong because I totally agree with you that by the end of the film, does it have that same magic that Raiders of the Lost Ark has? No, it doesn't. And that would be hard to replicate. And I will also suggest that maybe that's because I was 6 years old, believe it or not, Maddie, when Raiders of the Lost Ark came out. And I was only 14 when The Last Crusade came out. So I was maybe a little bit more impressionable and less cynical than I am now. So maybe that is part of it, that nostalgia aspect. But what I like in this film, too, a little bit, because I had a lot of fun with it. And it's a far, far better movie than the one I'm about to mention. But the latest Rocky movie. Did you see Rocky VI?
I did.
Okay. That was a similar situation. A lot less fanfare, obviously, but you had a 60-plus-year-old star making another boxing movie, and it was a total joke. And Stallone made it watchable by making it as familiar and comfortable as possible. He loaded the movie with characters and references to the original Rocky movie that gave the whole thing that air of nostalgia. And while this movie doesn't go overboard with the jokes about his age, though it does early on in the film, and I was a little worried after those first couple of scenes, there is plenty of really fun winking throughout, I think. We have Marion Ravenwood, Karen Allen, coming back.
She's great.
We get to see a glimpse of the Ark again. There's even references to other movies, like Brando's The Wild Ones and your boy Michael Curtiz with the sword fighting. There's a real Errol Flynn aspect to some of these scenes. The whole story is really Raiders of the Lost Ark, but with communists in place of Nazis and Cate Blanchett in place of Belloc and the Crystal Skull instead of the Ark. Even the big action scenes all felt to me, while maybe not as magical, they felt lifted right out of Raiders. I thought they were fun then. I think they're fun now. And I think that Ford is no less the hero now than he was then. They don't limit the action. They actually pulled off the indie we wanted to see. I couldn't believe
it. Are you serious? Yeah. No.
And I was enjoying the dialogue, the rapport between him and Jim Broadbent in a few scenes. Shia LaBeouf I liked.
Jim Broadbent isn't even needed in this film. I don't know why he's there.
But they're so much fun talking to each other.
He's basically there to fulfill the role of Marcus Brody,
role,
you know,
and it
played
works.
By Denholm Elliott. But for what reason?
It doesn't matter.
And after the third tribute to the late, great Denholm Elliott, I love him, but he played a minor character in the last film.
Oh.
Basically, this film was relying
on minor parts, Maddie.
No, it was relying on that kind of filler. How many tributes can we bring into this film so that the people don't concentrate on the fact that there isn't a plot? Can you please
There's
tell
too
me
much plot.
What are they supposed to do with that
I know.
Crystal skull?
Yeah.
What are they supposed
no,
to do with
that
it?
Doesn't
no,
work.
I'm seriously asking you, what are
and
they supposed to do?
I can't tell
with
you
it?
Because it doesn't work. I'm totally with
and you
there.
Know that you're supposed to stop the Nazis and Raiders of the Lost Ark from getting the Ark of the Covenant. We know what's going to happen. Here
You get that same sense. You're just stopping
you
the
don't.
Russians instead.
No, you
yes,
don't.
Yes, and Spielberg and Lucas maybe actually even set up that whole dynamic. We get those great scenes when he goes into that town, the model town that's being built as a nuclear fallout shelter, and even the opening scene, which at first I didn't really quite get, but it's the scene of these teeny boppers driving their car, and it's long. It's maybe too long.
That sets up
the whole U.S. versus Russian dynamic without hardly any dialogue.
That opening scene is absolutely beautiful, and actually after our review of Iron Man, we were deluged with email, people chastising me in no uncertain terms for my lack of wanting to have a good time at that movie, but I think a lot of them actually ignored my primary criticism, which centered around Jon Favreau's direction and the composition of that film. In my opinion, it simply wasn't that memorable. It was really paint by numbers. Well, the opening shots of Crystal Skull let me know that the film composition wouldn't be my problem
sure.
with this film. It is just gorgeous. I will grant you that.
Janusz Kaminski.
Yeah, Spielberg's sweeping camera work. It is. It's a throwback to those late 30s and 40s, early Technicolor swashbucklers. Those shots against that blue gloaming outside the Area 51 mm-hmm. are just drop-dead gorgeous. And Cate Blanchett comes on and just starts chewing up the scenery, and it's great. And I'm ready. I am ready to go. I'm like, all right, here we go, Indy. And then for the first 15 minutes, the only dialogue given to Harrison Ford
is one-liners.
One-liners that really fall clunkily on the ear. They really do.
Yep.
And then he starts getting into it about halfway through when he starts to describe this explorer, Carnero or whatever, and how he was lost in Peru. I'm like, all right, here we go. We're going to get back on board. And that's when the plot just goes astray for me.
Okay.
I couldn't follow any of it. And it's mindless scene after mindless scene. And not only that, they're extraneous. Why? What is the point for half of those scenes?
I don't know. I had fun with them, though. And before I proceed to tear this movie down, I do want to pay it one more compliment. You talked about the visuals, how well it's shot. Well, we go back to Speed Racer, which we're going to hear some feedback on mm-hmm. from our listeners in the next segment. This is how you shoot action scenes, when you make it exciting, but you also try to make it practical and actually easy to follow. You're going to get a few awkward moments. You have them here where you know a character, maybe a villain, is standing kind of 10 feet away, but for some reason isn't involved in the action. The staging isn't always perfect, but for me, Maddie, those few awkward moments are more than made up for by our investment in the characters and our investment in the action, because we actually follow it. This is the answer to Speed Racer and Transformers.
I think what you're trying to do is you're referring to what the duck boat chase scene where everybody's jumping over and they're sword fighting. I mean, that's decent.
It wasn't as good, wasn't as memorable as Raiders.
Right. That's really the centerpiece here. And I actually have to disagree with you. I thought it was just as indecipherable. I had no idea what was going on. And there was no tension. There was no suspense during that whole thing. You can't keep track of where everybody is. You knew about 10 or 15 Russians were going to die and that everybody else was going to be okay because we have to have Cate Blanchett, you know, maybe meet her end at the very end. So, no, I actually don't buy that argument whatsoever. Okay. I was just as confused.
Well, I stand by that. I totally knew what was going on despite a few awkward moments. I think they actually try to make it visually followable, if that's even a word. But I'm with you that at the beginning, it was a little rocky. Some of the one-liners, the age jokes don't work, but I suppose they had to get those out of the way at the beginning. I'm thankful for that. I was also disappointed in what they did with Ray Winstone, who is an actor I love. I never got that real sense of history with their relationship and camaraderie between him and Indy that you get with him and Karen Allen. And even Shia LaBeouf. He had better chemistry with Shia LaBeouf here than he had with Ray Winstone, or even Denham Elliott from the first one. I think they tried to fill in the blanks of that relationship.
Well, what really happened is John Rhys-Davies, basically, he balked at the money offered to him, so he turned down the role.
Yeah.
Because he was going to bring back Saul, I think.
Yeah. Well, I never cared about their relationship really, and I just mean care as in I didn't have that much fun.
Oh, and you
when they
really have to, because there are some plot points that it's really going to hinge on their relationship towards the end.
You're right, and those don't work. And as a villain, I feel like Blanchett is actually wasted too. She's this mind control expert. We don't actually see her do anything cool though at all.
No.
Ever. I was disappointed with that, and I'm with you, Maddie. I really am on the ending of this film. The story wasn't as fulfilling as Raiders or The Last Crusade in terms of that object they're trying to acquire, and maybe this is where Lucas's sci-fi background really came into play here. It all got too otherworldly and super natural for me. I always love with the original films.
Well, don't go blaming Lucas right away, because you have to remember that the director Spielberg also brought us Close Encounters of the Third Kind,
which is a great film.
Yeah, exactly, and referenced a lot here, obviously.
You're right, and he gave us AI as well. I'm not saying that he doesn't have that sci-fi background. Maybe this is where Lucas injected some of that stuff.
But I think Lucas is responsible for the story, and ultimately that's what lets this film down.
Exactly. I love the fact with those old films that you couldn't always explain things rationally, what was going on, but you bought into the spirituality of it and the history of all these artifacts. This movie doesn't give us any real answers, but it actually just labors too much to explain all the irrational forces, and it didn't hold my interest or give me that real sense of wonder the other movies did. But as I said, I was 6 when Raiders came out, so maybe that sense of wonder was easier to come by. Maybe it was.
Well, I will say, I did have a lot of fun. Look, people are going to go see this film whether we tell them to or not. You're going to see it. And do yourself a favor, do see it on the big screen. Don't wait for it to come on DVD. I did have fun, but the fact of the matter is, it wasn't an Indiana Jones film for me. So maybe it didn't live up to my expectations. But I'm also glad that it wasn't Moonraker bad.
Yeah.
It didn't destroy a franchise like a lot of those Roger Moore films did to the James Bond for me. So.
Okay. Well, I have a feeling that our star ratings on our website are probably going to be pretty similar, but I had a very different reaction to you. I thought it got that comfort of the other Indiana Jones film. So there you have it. Indiana Jones is in theaters everywhere now, and we know you all are probably going to see it. If you do see it and agree or disagree with our takes, email feedback@filmspotting.net or leave us a voicemail. You can call 206-203-2463.
All right, time for a quick break. When we come back, sorry, Maddie, your positive review of Speed Racer has driven me to stop listening to the podcast. Adam and I mend some fences next in listener feedback.
How did Charlton Heston do that email from the grave, Maddie?
Stay with us.
It's a pity little price to pay to make the hard times go away, but I love you as you are. I say the words and then I'm not so sure exactly what we say them for, and this is my concern. But everybody needs a place to start. Oh wait, let's be your heavy heart and lean your thoughts on me. Dreams when spirit crushes working teams to leave you where you are. You decimate my inhibitions and I can't be sane. Let's take a walk out on the broken glass. Come on, come on, come on. You decimate my inhibitions and I can't be sane. Lay all your worries on my back.
Four for return.
Five for return.
Dude. All right, look. There's only one return, okay? And it ain't of the king, it's of the Jedi.
Oh, Star Wars geek.
Oh, I'm the geek? Look at you two whipping out your preciouses.
You'll have to excuse him. He's not down with the trilogy.
Welcome back to Film Spotting with Maddie Robinson. I'm Adam Kempinar. Of course, a scene there from Kevin Smith's Clerks 2, actually in your top five dialogue scenes of all time, Maddie, last week on the show when we play it there, because it does tie in perfectly with our poll question that we posed to you last week on the show. We wanted to know what you think the best movie franchise is. I know, with at least three movies. We took a lot of grief for this list, didn't we, Maddie? So here are the choices that we gave you. We didn't want to go overboard with all 50 franchises here, so give us a little bit of credit here. We tried. Is it Harry Potter, Indiana Jones, James Bond, which we actually forgot to say during the show but definitely included it, Lord of the Rings, Spider-Man, Star Wars, Superman, or Other? Maddie, how did it come out?
This is unbelievable. I absolutely love it. Lord of the Rings, number one at 31%. Star Wars, number two at 30%.
Yeah.
And you know what I blame that on? I blame that on those three movies that Lucas brought out in the 90s. I think that's what it was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I definitely think you're right. The prequels buried it a little
bit. Yeah, exactly. Indiana Jones, 13%. James Bond, close behind at 10%. Other at 9%. And I guess some of the other franchises they were looking at, maybe Alien, yep. Back to the Future, Star Trek.
Star Trek, we forgot. The Bourne, Identity series, great. And of course, Maddie, one person said, you ever hear The Godfather? I guess I didn't include it because it's not an action movie, and that's what I think of franchises as, but there are three movies.
I've never seen it. Harry Potter at 5% and Spider-Man 1%. Oh, man. Superman.
Ouch.
Ouch. 0%. Come on.
My son Holden and my daughter Sophie would take umbrage with that. They were watching Superman. Holden just went to the DVD player, grabbed Superman, put it in, and watched it this weekend.
Chris Reeves?
He loves it. With Chris Reeves. Of course, Superman 1.
The real one.
Yeah, the real one.
Nicely
That's a
done.
Bad outfit. My favorite line in the whole movie when Superman comes out of the revolving door there. So we do appreciate all your responses. We obviously couldn't include all of them, but I guess Lord of the Rings just nipped Star Wars there. This week's poll question on the site. We want to know, we're really asking you to help do the work for us here on Film Spotting, because June 6th is maybe the most depressing weekend this entire summer in terms of new movies, and we don't know what to do. So we're asking you, should Film Spotting mess with the Zohan on June 6th, of course referencing the new Adam Sandler film?
Yes, it might actually be funny. No, review Kung Fu Panda. No, review anything but Zohan or Panda.
Maddie, right now, where would your vote go?
I want to go with Kung Fu Panda. I'm a sucker for animation.
But is there really going to be anything to discuss about it?
I don't know.
I don't know either. Maybe I would go with review anything but Zohan or Panda. And I will just throw out there that there's a movie opening called The Promotion that weekend. If we are able to get to a screening of it, John C. Reilly's in it. It's directed by Steve Conrad, who's a Chicago filmmaker.
Oh, that's right.
Sean William Scott's also in it. I don't know if that is something that helps it or not.
Wasn't Mongol also coming out that week?
It might be, but I don't think it's opening here that weekend.
Oh, okay.
I think it's just in New York and L.A. So we want to know what you think. Please tell us what you want to hear us review. So everyone, get out to the polls. We really want to go with whatever you recommend.
Everyone was kung fu fighting.
Come on, we got work to do. Pops, the race is less than 2 days away. How fast did Roy Elfman say he could build that tin can with his fancy machines?
36 hours.
And we'll do it in 32. Come on, let's go.
A scene there, of course, from the tremendous box office bomb, I'm sorry, Maddie, Speed Racer.
Ouch.
But we want to share some thoughts that we received in the mailbag. We really did get some great responses here. Some people defending you, Maddie. Some people definitely agreeing with me that the film didn't work. Why don't you start with this one from Donnie Williams in Seattle?
For the past few months, I've been wondering if beret-wearing Maddie was capable of having fun at the movies. After all, this is the guy who had to list off about 17 caveats before admitting to enjoying a film like The Mist.
True.
And he also gave the wonderful Iron Man a mixed review.
True as well.
However, after listening to you guys review Speed Racer, I've decided that it's Adam who needs to hold a mirror up to the nose of his inner child, who most certainly must have died years ago. Stuffy critics have piled on this candy-colored concoction for consisting of too many empty calories.
All those C's.
But I think it's one of the most fun and innovative films I've seen all year. This sounds like Maddie's Movie Minute.
It does.
The Wachowskis successfully brought an old anime to roaring life and gave us a movie that is unlike anything else we've ever witnessed on screen. I'll admit the script is a bit messy and confusing, but I'll take an ambitious romp like Speed Racer over other by-the-numbers blockbusters any day. Adam, if you can't enjoy a movie that features a scene with a monkey wearing pajamas, then I'm afraid it's time to hand over your film criticism card. Keep up the great work, guys. Love the show.
And
thank
actually,
you, Donnie.
Yeah, I've actually been meaning to pick up my Chicago Film Critics membership card. I don't have it, so I can't give it back. I'm sorry, Donnie. I am going to respond by way of Kevin in Calgary. Sorry, Maddie, your positive review of Speed Racer has driven me to stop listening to the podcast.
You and my mom.
On many other positions that I've heard you take, I have had nothing but respect for your opinion. Shocking. But you have totally lost me this time. I cannot in good conscience share my time with you in your podcast any longer. Kidding, But come on. The only other time I've written to the show, I had nothing good to say about Charlie Bartlett. Well, I'd rather sit through a Charlie Bartlett marathon than waste 135 seconds of my life seeing any of Speed Racer's 135 whopping minutes again. Can I have a time machine so I can go back and take out the Wachowskis right after they complete the first Matrix?
Well, Samuel Todd Stevens piles on here, writing from the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Let me get this straight. Matty can't find in himself the ability to get excited about what appears to be yet another charming, beautifully animated, and witty movie from Pixar in WALL-E. He says it's all made up to look charming and witty, just so you go buy the lunchbox, you go buy the video game, you go buy the WALL-E collectible dustbuster. But he can go to Speed Racer, a movie he himself describes as a Skittles-induced stroke, which has marketing tie-ins up the wazoo, then enjoy it and recommend that we send our impressionable young children to get brainwashed into buying Emil Hirsch emblazoned Speed Racer lunchboxes? Mr. Robinson, you confuse me to no end.
Me too.
But I will say you make my 6-mile jogs much more interesting because of it.
Maybe I need to take up jogging because otherwise I have no explanation for your lack of consistency, Matty.
Dude, I contradict myself very well than I contradict myself. I am vast. I contain multitudes. And actually, no,
a new line.
I didn't contradict myself. Well, Walt Whitman couldn't have said it any better. If WALL-E is as good as Speed Racer, I will have no compunction whatsoever telling people to go see it. What I was responding to, I haven't seen WALL-E, I was responding to a preview, and what amazed me was how this trailer seemed to come dripping with built-in nostalgia. I'm telling you, those Imagineers are amazing at what they do, and it cracks me up to see what will incite people to write into the show. You say anything remotely disparaging about this Disney-Pixar thing, we get emails using language assuredly never uttered in the Magic Kingdom.
Yeah, that's a fair point, Matty. Well, we'll go on to this one from Marco Monterosa in Arlington, Texas, that really does connect back to some of the points I made about Indiana Jones, the fourth installment. Adam, many times throughout the history of the show, you have indicated that your enjoyment of a particular movie as a child made it better than it would have been otherwise. I'm willing to bet that you never watched Speed Racer as a kid. You're absolutely right. I am 45 years old, and as a kid, I used to run home after school to watch every episode of Speed on TV. I loved the movie. It hit me on that nostalgic level. I had a very similar response to it that I did all those years ago sitting in front of the TV, and that's worth something, isn't it? I know it's no Revenge of the Sith or Emmett Otter's Jug Band Christmas, and no, it's not. But hey, I love the show. Go Speed, go.
Well, Kent Keller of Omaha, Nebraska offers a rebuttal. I'm old enough to have great memories of hurrying home from grade school to catch the original animation version of Speed Racer on TV. I side completely with Adam. I was simply bored.
Yeah, and he also mentioned the tunneling effect of the race scenes that we both brought up didn't work. He says it's so disorienting. There's no sense of place up or down. You don't know who's in the lead, who the bad guys are, and what they are doing. A big dud and disappointment, he concludes. So obviously, Kent there to support me, but Marco right there with you.
Well, I actually think my lack of familiarity with Speed Racer actually helped, because this movie doesn't, you can say whatever you will to criticize it, but it doesn't play down to you. It just creates this world and says, hey, catch up. These are the rules of the world. This is what we play by. And I was going right along with them.
It's almost impossible to photograph in the red light district. It's a whole separate society within itself. I mean, you just walk down that one lane and it's another world. And of course, as soon as I entered the brothels, I met the children. They were all over me, and I would play with them and take their photographs, and they would take mine.
That's a clip from the movie Born into Brothels, a documentary that came up a couple weeks ago when we discussed our top 5 photography movies. And we got this email from Jared Wilson in Denver, Colorado, who is a photographer. And he wrote in thanking Anthony Behar, who's a photographer in New York City and longtime listener of the show. He was our special guest last week. Jared says that Anthony saved the show by listing Born into Brothels as his number one. And Adam, you're not in a hurry to see it because it sounds too depressing. We'll get in a hurry. Cue it up and bump it to the top, because this film isn't depressing at all. In fact, it is one of the most inspirational films you will ever see. It shows you that a little heart, creativity, and compassion can indeed change the world. And I can say that this film is the only film I've ever seen that has indeed changed my life. My wife and I used to talk about adoption, but after seeing this film, we are now in the process of adopting a child from Ethiopia and hope to have our baby here this year. Depressing, Adam? You are so wrong. Depressing is not seeing this amazing film, and even more depressing would be seeing this film and not walking away feeling, no, knowing that we can all change the world.
That is awesome.
That
really
is
really cool.
Great stuff. We appreciate the email, Jared, and also we congratulate you and your wife on your pending adoption. That really is fantastic. My only response to it, again, this was kind of one of those asides that you say, and then you get deluged with emails from people who are like, how is Born into Brothels depressing? You have to see it. We got a ton of them. I do absolutely hear what you're saying. All I was really commenting on, and it's something I've talked about on earlier shows, you know, sometimes you just want a good, fun movie to throw in late at night. You don't want to watch, like, The Motorcycle Diaries or Ingmar Bergman.
You want the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull.
You kind of do. Sometimes I'm that way when I'm trying to fit a movie into what are busy schedules for us. And a movie that is called Born into Brothels, the Calcutta Street Children, and I'm getting the name wrong there, but it's about children in Calcutta who were born into abject poverty and are born to prostitutes, I'm sure it is very uplifting, and I really will see it. I absolutely will. I'm just saying, on the surface, I can't get excited about seeing a movie that has kids running around in poverty.
Well, I'm so glad we brought Anthony Behar on the show to pick up our slack.
Yeah, he saved us.
Exactly, because Mike Bachhoven writes in here, I was on the way to my email inbox to scream, what about War Photographer, when Tony Behar put it on there during this week's Top 5. What makes this movie so hard to take in one viewing is the way the film was shot. The director planted three cameras on photojournalist James Natchway, so not only do you see what he ends up shooting, but what his options are. It's a great movie for detailing the horrors of war and the responsibility of being behind the camera, but also a masterclass in what a trained photojournalist sees, how he sees it, and how he composes his shots. Amazing movie. It's on Netflix. Check it out.
And I bet you've already added it to the top of your queue, Maddie.
It is there.
It does sound really brilliant, and Mike certainly wasn't alone in praising Tony for that pick. I am in a hurry to see it as well. So again, great batch of feedback. We really do appreciate all the insight, and if you have any thoughts for us, comments, or suggestions, send them to feedback@filmspotting.net.
Time for another quick break. Up next, Massacre Theater and the return of Charlton Heston, the 70s Mac Daddy saving humanity again in Soylent Green. Stay with us.
I never treated you so mean, like that's a reason to be proud. My love, I know it's been so long, but I thought that I'd just call around now. And with that smile it says, yeah, well, I knew you'd wait for me. I can hear you say, the day I fall down at your feet, go to hell. Go to hell.
Welcome back to Film Spotting. Time now for Massacre Theater, the part of the show where Adam and I massacre a beloved screenplay, and you, our beloved listeners, get a chance at winning a beloved DVD. Last week, we massacred a scene between Bette Davis and Gary Merrill in the classic All About Eve. A tie-in, of course, with our top five dialogue scenes. And while we usually play a clip, we thought it might be fun to bring on a friend of the show, the incomparable David Hanbury, a friend of mine from New York, last seen in God Save Gertrude, a punk rock take on Hamlet that ran in Minneapolis, to perhaps do the scene for us.
Looks like I'm going to have a very fancy party. I thought you were going to be late. When I'm the guest of honor. I had no idea you were even here. I ran into Eve on my way upstairs. She told me you were dressing. That never stopped you before. Well, we started talking. She wanted to know all about Hollywood. She seemed so interested. She's a girl of so many interests. It's a pretty rare quality these days. She's a girl of so many rare qualities.
So she seems.
So you pointed out. So often. So many qualities. So often. Her loyalty, efficiency, devotion, warmth, affection, and so you. So young and so fair.
Well, David's been on the show once before, I think only as an outtake in the podcast version of the show, but I'd like to thank him for making me hear his voice now every time I watch the amazing Bette Davis. He's really totally ruined All About Eve for me.
He's a wonderful actor. All right, Adam, why don't you reach into the film spotting hat and pick out this week's winner?
And the winner is Steve Visolich from sunny Pittsburgh, PA.
The Iron City baby, love that Iron City beer.
Congratulations, Steve. Email feedback@filmspotting.net and we will set you up with the DVD of your choice.
Ta-tay-tee-toe-too.
No, no, Miss Lamont, round tones, round tones. Now let me hear you read your line.
Maddie, we move on now to this week's edition of Massacre Theater, and we really don't need to say anything about this, though I'm going to throw down a challenge. I think this is going to be a tough one. I do.
Really?
Yeah, I do.
I love this film. Everybody's seen this film. What are you talking about?
I don't know about that. So why don't we go ahead and get into the scene. I start it. You give me the action.
And action.
Hey, man, I'm sorry if I scared ya.
You'd have to do one hell of a lot more than that to scare me.
I've been looking all over for you, man. Didn't nobody tell you I was looking for you?
Hey, I can't keep track of all you punks running around here backwards.
Hey, you're supposed to be the fastest thing in the valley, man, but that can't be your car. That must be your mama's car. I'm sort of embarrassed to be this close to you.
Why am I not surprised? Driving a field car.
Field car? What's a field car?
Field cars run through a field, dropping cow shit all over the place to make the lettuce grow.
That's pretty good. Hey, I like the color of your car there, man. What's that supposed to be? Sort of a cross between piss yellow and puke green, ain't it?
Yeah, well, you can call that a paint job, but it's pretty ugly. I bet you have to sneak up on the pumps just to get a little air in your tires.
Well, at least I don't have to pull over to the side just to let a funeral go by, man.
Oh, funny.
And scene. Okay, can I take that back? That one is going to be really easy, and we'll probably get thousands of entries. So if you know what movie we just massacred, email your name, location, and the movie's title to feedback@filmspotting.net. The deadline is Wednesday, May 28th.
The winner will be selected randomly from all the correct entries and announced on next week's show. To get official Massacre Theater rules, please visit us at www.filmspotting.net.
The supply of Soylent Green has been exhausted.
Detective Sergeant Thorne. He has a 2-year backlog of unsolved murders. Now he's on a case that must be solved. Saul Roth, Thorne's private library.
Hey, Saul!
A living book in a world without books.
Have some pencils. Courtesy of your next assignment. William R. Simonson.
Simonson. He was the first to learn the secret of Soylent Green.
Adam, it's 2022. The world is living in greenhouse effect conditions. Ghastly overpopulated. There's 40 million people in New York City alone, a population subsisting on rations provided by the Soylent Corporation, which now offers Soylent Green, a concoction of soybean and lentils, and a special ingredient. Charlton Heston is a world-worn detective investigating the death of Joseph Cotton, one of our favorite actors,
yeah,
a prominent Soylent board member. What he discovers as he unravels the mystery behind Soylent Green will shock the foundation of life itself. Adam, you and I, and I think everybody else knows what the mystery of Soylent Green is.
Huh?
Does it matter? Is this film still worth watching?
I like that you transition a little bit from Chuck Heston there to actually Vincent Price. I was really feeling that there. It really set the tone, Maddie. Yeah, I say, in fact, there is still a reason to watch this film. Lots of them. This is actually my favorite film of the marathon
yes!
so far.
I'm so glad you like this one.
It's by far my favorite. The production values aren't as high as Andromeda Strain, but you've got a great plot and a great what-if storyline.
Yeah.
Like the Omega Man, and of course, in many ways, it's the opposite of the Omega Man. Instead of New York being empty, it's overcrowded. But it's the Omega Man minus the camp and minus the ridiculous action scenes. And I should add, Maddie, minus the ridiculous Charlton Heston. I'm not sure if I would call his acting good, but it's far more restrained than anything in the Omega Man. And yes, there are still some Heston moments, the scene with the prostitute who he refers to as furniture, because that's what they call him.
Well,
they come
all,
with
yeah,
the apartment.
Yeah, they all
exactly,
do.
Exactly. When he says to her, get on the bed. And she gets on the bed, and it's just he can order you into the sack because he's Charlton Heston, and she's a prostitute. I guess that's the way it is.
Chucky Heston could order me into the sack.
Yeah, he could. But I actually cared about his character, and that's why knowing the ending, like with any great movie, I would argue, really doesn't matter. I didn't need the big twist payoff at the end. I wanted to see the case get solved. I wanted to see what happened to Detective Robert Thorne and all those supporting characters.
Yeah, I love this film, too. And I found it to be a really, really sophisticated cautionary tale.
It is.
I mean, it not only concerns global warming, but deforestation, also the growing economic disparity between the classes, too. You've got this Detective Thorne. He's operating between two worlds. You've got this Orwellian bourgeoisie and this proletariat who are left by the millions to sleep in the street. It's haunting.
Mm-hmm.
It's really sort of chilling.
Oh, it is.
And what I like most here, and you sort of touched on it, is Heston, Thorne, his detective, he's not a crusader. He's sort of this...
He's just a cop.
Yeah, he's this ambiguous sort of anti-hero. He's not intent on saving the world. He's more interested in surviving. When he goes to the first crime scene, what does he do? He loots,
yeah,
you know, basically to save himself.
They have water. They yeah. have fruit. They have bourbon.
Yeah. And I love this different take sort of on the Omega Man and Moses himself. Usually Heston is playing characters bridled with this self-importance, well aware that they're charged with saving mankind. Here, Heston's detective is a little more Marlowe, yeah. A little more Rick from Casablanca, mm-hmm. Just a little sleazy, more interested in self-preservation, who gets roped into helping humanity by unlocking the mystery. And you're absolutely right. It's this mystery, this sort of sleazy detective mystery, that makes this film really watchable.
Yeah, and also, it has some fantastic visual moments. And the Andromeda Strain looked great. Robert Wise with his sets, that was really fantastic. I bought into all that stuff. But this film, for me, if we have a better sci-fi moment in this marathon than the opening of this film,
really nicely
then
done.
I'm going to be blown away by The Man Who Fell to Earth and Logan's Run, because you've got two great visual montages in this film. The opening sequence is just this montage of photos that take us from the past through the film's present day, a little bit reminiscent of La Jetée, which a lot of people couldn't believe we left off our photography films list, and they're absolutely right. But it goes from the film's present day, the 70s, starts in the past, and then it goes through to the future where the story takes place in 2022. But it shows us how we got to the state we're in, where you have people subsisting on Soylent Green and never having seen a plant or grass. It shows us all with a photo montage, and it's the world. I don't want to pile on it, Maddie. I'm not trying to criticize you. Certainly you heard enough from our listeners on Silent Running. But it's the world Bruce Dern is so worked up about in Silent Running, except there's nothing good about it. There's poverty, there's unemployment, and they're the norm. And I think it's safe to say, actually, Maddie, did you have the same reaction, that Mike Judge certainly got some of his influence Idiocracy from this film?
Oh, yeah. But you know who I liked best of all was the character, I think it was Saul Roth, played by Eddie G. Robinson.
I have to tell you, Maddie, didn't recognize him until the credits rolled.
Yeah, he was suffering from cancer.
He died 9 days after they stopped shooting.
Yeah, unbelievable. He is so good here. I guess he was basically deaf on the set. I mean, he imbues this movie with just such a soul. He's sort of the Jiminy Cricket of the entire picture, and he balances out Heston's braggadocio. And he operated for me here, not to go back to Silent Running, Adam, but
like the drones. I'm sorry, it's not Star Wars, is it?
Exactly. Okay. The droids owe a lot to those little drones.
They do. I'll give you that.
I'm telling you, they got to me, just as this character did here. And of course, there's a scene where Charlton Heston really does cry.
Yeah.
And it's really, really moving. It's because of that relationship here between him and Eddie G. Robinson, who plays his book, the guy that basically unravels the mystery. Yeah,
yeah, and you're absolutely right. That is the other great big visual flourish in this movie, where I don't want to give this away in case people do want to go check it out, but he goes to watch this video montage of nature, of the way things used to be on Earth and how beautiful they were. And it reminded me of two things, actually. One I know is from the 70s, one I think is from the 70s, and it's the great video sequence in The Parallax View with Warren Beatty, where he goes on a job interview. If you haven't seen it, I'm convinced it's maybe the scariest 5 minutes in cinema, where they're just flashing images of him, of what America is or could be. And also Kurt Vonnegut. I love the book Breakfast of Champions, and I'm pretty sure it's in that book where, in the future, their pornography is watching other people eat food, just gobble up food like strawberries and whipped cream and this orgy of food. Mm-hmm. And it's so great because you watch it and you actually understand why a person in Edward G. Robinson's situation would go there. And it made me more conscious of the environment. It actually engaged me more on kind of a political level. I thought it said so much more just in that sequence than anything in Silent Running. It shows instead it tells us.
For its lack of special effects, I think this is just a completely realized and haunting vision of a dystopia. I really do. I think Inconvenient Truth, Al Gore's movie, has nothing on this film, or really any of the prescient messages in any of these films that we've seen. Mm-hmm. Are they over the top? Yeah, but that's why I'm kind of loving it.
That's why it's satire.
That's the point.
Right?
Make the extreme point to keep the chances of it actually happening all the more extreme.
Well, Logan's Run next week is going to have some big shoes to fill. High expectations. We are really excited about it, though. And I don't know, Maddie, if I'm more excited to see Peter Ustinov or Farrah Fawcett Majors.
I got to say, Peter Ustinov, one of the reasons that I am an actor, one of my favorite actors of all time.
Nice.
All right, time for a quick break. When we return, in honor of Indy's return to the big screen after a near 20-year absence, Adam and I list our top 5 characters who need a comeback. Will Fletch live?
Did my car just hit a water buffalo?
Stay with us.
Well, the day cuts down, lengthy shadows on unfamiliar towns, and I drove 300 miles from the place I call home, and I tip my hat to the angel of the north.
Time now to take a look at what is new on DVD, brought to you by TLAvideo.com. Adam, the world of film at your fingertips.
Yes, it is. Well, it's another light week, unfortunately, but Grace is Gone, a movie, Maddie, you did not catch up with in theaters. It's out now on DVD. John Cusack anti-Iraq war film, though I think it has a pretty good balance there. Unfortunately, No real extras on it, but worth seeing, I think.
I'm really interested in seeing it because you said yourself that he acts in this film, or he attempts to act.
Yeah,
he's
yeah.
not just playing
Sam
John
and I
Cusack.
Took big issues with that. He actually tries to play a character and overdoes it just a little bit too much. It's really obvious painfully from the opening shot of the film. Also out, your boy, Maddie, because we know you love The Mother of Tears, which you saw in Toronto. Dario Argento's box set, apparently, it doesn't include Suspiria, but they're trying to feature some of his more diverse works. At least that's what I read. It includes Tenebrae, 1982. I know that's a real favorite of a lot of horror buffs. Phenomena, 85. Trauma, 93. The Card Player, 2004. And Do You Like Hitchcock from just a few years ago, 05.
Hey, man. Mr. Argento, the second film I saw as a film spotting critic, midnight showing, and I'm thinking to myself, what am I doing here? Can I get up and leave? But I thought, no, I am a film spotting critic, and it is my job
to
be exposed to varying degrees of art. And I say, for what it is, it's well done.
And I was going to wrap you across the knuckles, right?
Right.
Okay.
I would have snuck in.
Yeah, you would have. Rambo, the complete collector's set, also out. Apparently, just kind of a redux and kind of a lame one of the other releases that have come before. But First Blood has a new audio commentary by Sly Stallone, and it's got a rarely seen suicide ending. So if you're a big Rambo buff, you can check out the collector's set now. We, of course, urge you to head to recast.spout.com to participate in our Recast Raiders of the Lost Art Contest. Indiana Jones, Marion Ravenwood, Dr. Renee Belloc, who are the right people to play these roles? The first place winner is going to get American Apparel Spout swag. The second prize winner is going to get Speed Racer, the Next Generation, The Beginning on DVD. It's our last copy to give away. For any past winners, if you haven't claimed your prize yet, send us an email at feedback@filmspotting.net and we will get it out to you. And actually, you only have about another week to enter. The Tuesday right after Memorial Day, that's the deadline to get those recasting picks in. And again, we urge you to do so. We look forward to reading them.
Okay, time for donations. We want to thank everyone who surfed their way over to filmspotting.net this week and threw some of their hard-earned dollars our way in support of the show. As always, we are truly humbled by each and every donation we get. Thank you, thank you, thank you. It goes a long way in keeping us doing what we're doing. Thank you to Lazi in Tampere, Finland. Peter in Dundee, Angus, UK. Peter in Pacific Palisades, California. Jarrett in Jackson, Missouri. And Jeremy in Ivanhoe, Victoria, Australia. Thank you, one and all. And remember that for every $10 you donate, your name is entered into the Film Spotting hat. At the end of the month, we pick a name, and you get to pick a film for us to review on an upcoming edition of Film Spotting After Hours. If you'd like to donate, go to filmspotting.net and click on the donation tab, which rests at the top of the page.
And we have now heard from our last Listener's Choice winner. She is Karen Novak from Mason, Ohio, the Jar City.
The Jar
City. Guessing, Maddie. She sent us her three picks. We'll mention those when we actually do the review here during the after-hour show, probably in a couple weeks. But we have selected her top choice, she'll be happy to know. Robert Wise, there he is again. His 1963 horror classic, The Haunting. This really is supposed to be a great film. We both are pretty deficient when it comes to horror films. Really am looking forward to this one.
I'm really looking forward to it. And again, this week we got to send out and say, Karen, get well soon. Our
best
thoughts are
wishes.
With you.
And the sun, it set fire to the heavens. On the hills of Sheffield tonight. And I will sail over this countryside with new friends and old. And we are nowhere, but man, we're all right.
You are listening to Film Spotting with Adam and Maddie. It's top five time here on the show. And in honor of Indiana Jones, Maddie, as you said, we are going to deliver our top five characters in need of a comeback. And the original title for this segment was actually Heroes Who Need a Revival. So maybe that clues you in a little bit to what we're going for here. I got to give some credit to P-Show and our message boards for coming up with a little catchier title. Characters in Need of a Comeback. Why don't you set up your list, Maddie? We'll see if I disagree with you on anything, and then we'll dive in.
All right. Well, we here at Ballgame Studios, we've had a really, really rough year. We put all our money behind our underwater roller skating ABBA-inspired Western epic musical. We even brought in the Wachowski brothers to do some reshoots, and we lost our shirts.
What about Pixar?
So we're going to take the easy way out, and we're just going to buy the rights to a dormant franchise and its hero, which we know has a built-in audience. We'll slap it on a couple T-shirts. We got to make some quick cash. We got to save the studio.
I like it.
Exactly. So we came up with some really, really bad ideas that were quickly discarded. And here are some of those that will not be making our list, our fall lineup.
Just you wait. Maybe they will.
Popeye Doyle, Gene Hackman, he can still play him. He can still play Popeye
Except
Doyle.
He's basically retired
He's
now.
Retired. Yeah, exactly. He won't play him. We thought of Will Smith as Virgil Tibbs. We thought of Ian McKellen playing a completely reimagined version of Virgil Tibbs. Thankfully, all nixed.
Okay.
But my number five, I'm going to go with Philip Marlowe. We're bringing him back. Mm-hmm. I was thinking of Peter Dinklage. I was going to make it a Werner Herzog shoot, but I'm always looking to bring back one of my favorite actors. Going to bring him back to the A-list. We're going to put Michael Keaton back on the map.
So you're going to cast these movies too?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, well, you're ruining a great idea I had, but we'll get into that here in a second.
I'm bringing Keaton back. Cormac McCarthy is going to do the script. Elmer Leonard is going to help out.
Nice.
It's going to be a smash. We're going to bring it out around Thanksgiving.
I think that's a great idea, Maddie. And you've basically touched on this, but these are characters who the characters themselves can't really be dead. I don't think we're trying to literally bring them back from the dead. At least I wasn't. And it can't be a case where you're taking a character. You said Popeye Doyle. You know, I'd love to see another movie featuring Bud White from L.A. Confidential. I'd love to see another movie featuring Marge Gunderson from Fargo. But that's kind of a different top five list, I think. That's sequels we'd like to see. Characters we still want to see in more movies. These are actually dormant franchises we're trying to revive and bring back. And for me, I wanted to throw out this idea, and we'll see. Maybe you'll go along with it. Mm-hmm. Maybe you'll hold off, because I do think it's a good idea. We're setting ourselves up for some great casting ideas, right? So why not, rather than give our picks, let's wait till a future show. Let's let our listeners, if they like this idea, write in with their picks for who should play these roles, and then that will be a future top five. We'll pick the best listener suggestions. It's gold, Maddie.
I think we can still pick them, but the fact of the matter is that Ballgame Studio hinges on these projects. We've already got these actors lined up, so I need to keep them in.
Okay,
there.
Well, I'm going to leave them out then, except for maybe one. My number five, I did consider, after all the love it got last week on the show during listener feedback, Jack Burton, Big Trouble in Little China. I know we have a lot of fans of John Carpenter out there, but I am going with another Carpenter hero, Snake Plissken. I absolutely love Escape from New York. I have to confess, I have not seen Escape from L.A., but I haven't really heard anything good about it. I would love to go back and see maybe a prequel. Start before Escape from New York and take us up to a young Snake Plissken, how he gets to where he is. I do have someone in mind for it, but again, I'm going to leave it out because I want to see if listeners come up with some great ideas.
All right, well, my number four, this is probably the most sacrilegious one on my list, and it's really not a franchise, but hear me out, okay? It's actually for a television series, and it's based on Chauncey the Gardener from Being There. And what I'm going to do is I'm thinking he's going to travel all over the world every week, you know, sort of like, what's that guy, Bruce Banner in The Hulk, right? And he's going to win over all manner of humanity, billion-dollar corporations, nonprofits, cults, every sector of the world that is ripe for lampooning, winning everyone over, and by the end of the series, he's anointed as a presidential candidate only to lose to an even more dumbed-down candidate run by a Karl Rove-type puppeteer who's on to the whole charade.
It's a little Manchurian candidate-ish.
But I think it works. I think it totally works. And I had an idea for who I was going to have play Chauncey, but, heeding your wishes, I'll leave it out.
Okay, well, I can't wait to see what listeners come up with. That one, I think maybe you were on that Skittles-induced mescaline stroke that you had with...
Dude, this is a moneymaker.
Speed Racer.
Fox already bought the option on this.
Okay.
If you're listening, Fox.
Yeah, you actually mentioned this one earlier coming into this segment, and I was going to make a joke and sit here and tell you after your little tirade last week that my number four, number three was William Miller from Almost Famous, just to see what your reaction was. But then that got me thinking about journalists. And I'm like, can we have a journalist hero? And of course, the first two that pop into mind, Woodward and Bernstein. Well, they're still alive and they're not fictional. And I don't think we're going to have another Woodstein romp through the political landscape.
Well, we did
DC.
Have Wired, that John Belushi expose.
That's true.
Awful.
But I decided not to go there, but it did make me come back to one of my all-time favorite comedies, certainly one of my all-time most quotable films, and it's Fletch. And I don't know if you've been following the history of this production. They've been trying to get a new Fletch, Fletch 1, made for at least 10 years. Kevin Smith was going to direct with Jason Lee as Fletch. Harvey Weinstein wouldn't go for it. It eventually petered out. So then Bill Lawrence, the guy who created Scrubs, came on board, and he was going to produce it, I think, directed
with
Zach Braff.
Oh, he's going to go with Braff? Oh, man.
Which, this is sacrilege, but he almost fits better in that role than Jason Lee. Well, maybe not. We'll see. And then the third one, that eventually got dumped. Zach Braff said, no, they're not doing it. And now Steve Pink, who is one of John Cusack's producing partners, he was involved in High Fidelity, he's doing it. And at least according to Wikipedia, and we know how unreliable they can be, supposedly they have cast as Fletch in the Chevy Chase role, none other than Joshua Jackson.
I don't want to wait.
That's right.
For our lives to be over.
He of Dawson's Creek fame. I'm sorry. Wow. I'm not seeing it. I hope someone else comes along and recasts it, revives it. Maybe, Maddie, we should do it. But Fletch is a hero I want to see back on the screen.
Well, my number three, Fletch.
Really?
You took it. You took it. And here are just some of the ideas that I came up with. I was thinking maybe David Spade, but no one's going to go see David Spade because no one likes him. Eddie Murphy, but he's going to want to do a lot of with the makeup. So
I was thinking
Tracy Morgan.
Interesting.
I love Tracy Morgan, and he needs a movie vehicle. He's great on 30 Rock. I'm thinking we're going to get the Morgan involved here.
Okay. Well, for my number three, I'm going with a pretty big franchise, one that people complain was left out of our poll question. I want to see an ass-kicking female hero back on the screen. I'm going with Warrant Officer Ellen Ripley from the Alien series. I know Sigourney Weaver's still around. She could maybe pull off again reprising that role. And actually, I want to go back real quick and say Kurt Russell may be even able to pull off a Harrison Ford and play Snake Plissken again.
Yeah,
but I'm assuming, I want to go back, I want to see prequels here. I want to see Snake Plissken get to Escape from New York. I want to see a young Ellen Ripley grow up in that corporation and get to the beginning of Alien. And I do have one person I'm going to throw out, Maddie. The only one I'm going to say.
Yeah.
Maggie Gyllenhaal.
All right, I'm spitballing here. I'm going Christina Ricci. Where we're going to get Gary Busey as the abusive father.
I love it. Christina Ricci is an inspired pick.
All right. Well, my number two, I'm bringing back the Thin Man.
I'm bringing back both
Nick and Nora.
Yeah.
And so I started thinking, all right, who's going to play it? I was thinking, you know, Ralph Fiennes, Kristen Scott Thomas. But I'm like, I'm not going to go see that again. I saw that already. Elliot Gould, too old, I think. Maybe Eddie Izzard, but I don't think of him as much of an actor. So then I thought, let's go big. We got to go big. We got to save Ballgame Studios. We're bringing in Tom Hanks and Ellen Chenoweth.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
She's way smaller than him.
She is. She is. We'll put in some raised platforms. It'll be fine. Well, Hanks, he's always wanted to do a Dean Martin biopic with Scorsese, and this could be just as good.
And she could really rattle off that dialogue.
Yeah.
Highly trained actress. Tom Hanks, of course, is very good. That's a great pick. And I was really jealous because when you said it, I was like, damn, that would be in my top five. But I've relegated it to the honorable mentions. My number two, let's go ahead and bring up the music a little bit here. And now we're going to hear just a little smidge of dialogue.
Looks like we're... Looks like we're shy one horse.
You brought two too many.
When this topic first came up, Maddie, and we actually have been throwing this around for several months, this was the first person I thought about, my first hero I wanted to see make a comeback. And I know when everyone talks about Sergio Leone films, they think about Clint Eastwood and The Man with No Name, but I'm sorry, I want to bring back Harmonica, one of the biggest badasses in the history of cinema, Charles Bronson as Harmonica. That second part of that opening scene that you just heard there, where they say, you know, we don't have enough horses, and he says, you brought two too many, takes out three guys. And then the whole film, he's just such an enigma because he doesn't talk. But when he does talk, of course, you pay attention to everything he says, and he ends up being really the savior of the movie. I love that character. I don't know who can do that Charles Bronson character justice, but I'd love to think about it. It's my number two.
Yeah, I don't know. We here at Ballgame Studios, we don't trust Westerns. I'm sorry. People aren't going to go see him. Now, what if we did a McCloud kind of thing where we bring him into the city, where so he's like he's a cowboy in the city?
Great.
We could roll with that.
Great. Harmonica, pig in the city.
All right. Well, my number one of my favorite actors, one of my favorite characters of all time, I think you already know who it is. I'm going with Bullet. And I'm thinking, you know, Russell Crowe, Brad Pitt, they probably both could do it.
Please,
but I'm gonna leave it up to the audience.
Okay.
I want to see who they come up with. I would love Soderbergh to direct it, I got to say.
Wow. Now, that's a good pick, too. I would love to see Bullet with Soderbergh in charge. And I would love to see what our listeners come up with for recasting
But
the
I don't
Queen.
Want Clooney. I don't
want
to go
tough
there.
One. You're
I don't
right.
want Clooney.
Okay.
Maybe Don
we're,
Cheadle?
We're putting it right now. It's exempt.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, Don Cheadle may actually be perfect for my number one. And I want to thank you so much, Maddie, for absolutely destroying my pick right off the bat. Let's hear a scene from it.
I'm going home, man.
They're your people.
Not mine. Yours. You made this scene.
What do you want me to do? You want me to beg you? Is that what you're after?
Look, I've had your town up to here.
Boy, it would give me a world of satisfaction to horsewhip you, Virgil.
Yeah, well, my father used to say that. Even did once or twice.
Yeah, well, not enough to suit me. You listen to me. Just once in my life, I'm going to hold my temper. I'm telling you that you're going to stay here.
You're going to stay here if I have to go inside and call your chief of police and have him remind you of what he told you to do. But I don't think I have to do that, you see. No, because you're so damn smart. You're smarter than any white man. You're just going to stay here and show us all. You got such a big head that you could never live with yourself unless you could put us all to shame. You want to know something, Virgil? I don't think that you could let an opportunity like that pass by.
What was that you said? An absolutely horrible, terrible idea. You guys quickly threw it in the trash.
You can't do
this. They call me Mr. Tibbs.
You can't do this.
I want to see
Adam
Virgil Tibbs back on the screen. Why can't you do it?
You can't do it.
Why not?
You cannot do it. Well, first of all, they already did it with They Call Me Mr.
Sure.
Tibbs.
I don't want to see Sidney Poitier again in that same exact character. I want it to be reimagined in a modern setting. And I think you can do it because I think most people, and I know I'm getting myself into trouble here probably, racism isn't as explicit now maybe, at least in certain parts of the country, as it was, hear me out, as it was back then where he's at in the 1960s in the movie In the Heat of the Night. But certainly, I saw the Barack Obama exit interviews, the interviews with the people in West Virginia who didn't vote for him because he's a black man. Racism is alive and well. And if you're telling me that we couldn't stick a modern-day character like a Virgil Tibbs in a setting where he could really use his intelligence and his skills and his training as opposed to Shaft, who just uses his toughness and his sex appeal, I think you could see that. I don't know who would be great for it. I even thought of Will Smith, too. Of course, the first person that popped into my mind, we've seen him in action movies like Men in Black, like Independence Day. Both of those are really going for humor, though. I'm looking for a much more serious character. I think Virgil Tibbs belongs in this era. I want to see it.
All right. Well, I think it's a great message. I think your idea is there. For me, that movie, one of my favorites of all time, is so woven into those 2 years, 68 and 69.
You might
be into
right.
the fabric of America, those performances, Rod Steiger, that score with Ray Charles singing over the beginning. I
mean, Rod Steiger.
Yeah. Man, just how amazing is he?
Right.
I don't think.
It's just a little too hallowed for you.
Yeah. Just, and I can't go there.
Doesn't
I can't
translate.
Go there.
I can go there. I'm trying to be bold with my picks, Maddie. My studio is failing too, okay?
All right. Well, those are our top five characters who need a comeback. Please send your picks or any other comments about the show to feedback@filmspotting.net.
Opening wide this weekend, of course, Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. And, well, that's pretty much it. Maddie, you said you had fun with it. A lot less fun than I had. I say definitely go see it, and you will,
man,
probably.
If you get a chance and there's a drive-in theater around you and they're showing maybe Iron Man and Indiana Jones, that would be a great double feature.
Yeah, it would. On next week's show, we'll review Sex and the City with guest critic Jessica Reeves from the Chicago Tribune. Yes, we are trying to imbue Film Spotting with a little bit of a female perspective. And Maddie, in our waning minutes here, I'm actually going to challenge you on something. You came on board this show on the platform of being Mr. Sensitive. Mr. Sensitive to the romantic comedies, to what some would label the quote-unquote chick flicks. And now here you are actively lobbying me behind the scenes to bow out of this review. Explain why you have so much hatred for Carrie Bradshaw.
It's not hatred. It's just something I never got it. I just never got it. I have seen several episodes, several dear friends love this show, worship this show. They talk about how funny, how great it is, how empowering it is in many ways. I watched it. I never got it.
Okay.
Just never landed with me whatsoever. So I don't connect with it. So I'm going in. I'm hoping to be really surprised.
Yeah, well, I kind of am too. I did see some episodes. I didn't hate it, but I wasn't a religious watcher of it. So I'm looking to be surprised too. We do have some top five options that we like for next week's show. Maybe you guys can weigh in on these and help us out. Female bonding movies. We've done male bonding movies. Also, trendsetters. Movies like this that really set the tone for pop culture to a large extent. And then what I'm calling true Sex in the City movies. Movies that are really about sex in the city. We want to know what you think. Email feedback@filmspotting.net. Help us pick a top five.
Thanks, as always, to our wonderful listener volunteers, Candace, Frank, and Angela. Special thanks to Joe Dassault, Ron Jones, and Tori Malatia at Chicago Public Radio. And to David Ford and Original Signal Records for this week's music. You heard tracks from his new album, Songs for the Road. Learn more at myspace.com/David Ford. Adam, Film Spotting swag. Where can I get me some?
At filmspottingswag.com. No Mammoth-inspired commercial this week,
Sorry, man. The screenplay, I'm telling you, for Indiana Jones, just didn't inspire me.
I can feel that Lucas and David Kep pen dialogue. I feel you.
For Film Spotting, I'm Maddie Robinson.
And I'm Adam Kempinar. Thanks for listening.
This conversation can serve no purpose anymore. Goodbye.
Film Spotting is brought to you by TLAvideo.com, the world of film at your fingertips. Learn more by visiting the Film Spotting movie store at filmspotting.net. you see that email that came in just at the end of the day?
Uh-uh.
Right from Enrique about All About Eve?
No.
Do not attempt any heavy lifting or to operate heavy machinery before taking Massacre Theater. I swear I'm listening to you guys while I'm doing my usual routine in the gym on my lunch hour, and Adam's interpretation of Woody Allen as Betty Davis playing Margot Channing nearly turned me into one of the victims from the Final Destination movies. Barbell threatening to crush my larynx, though at least I would have died laughing. And then with the Joan Baez volley when talking about silent running, you almost got me again. Rare form this week, boys. Rare form. Enrique, Elgin, Texas. I hope, Maddie, that it's not too rare. It might be, though.
We bring it every week.
We do.
You can't box this.